Hi, everybody. Welcome back to an exciting new episode of Not Aspirational with Hannah Brown. I'm your host, Hannah Brown. Welcome back, everybody. Couple quick things before we get into the show. If you don't follow me already, follow me at Hannah A. Brown on Instagram and Twitter and on TikTok. Follow me at Hannah A. Brown Zero. Also, if you're liking the show, head on over to iTunes and leave a rating and a review if you would be so kind. If you're not liking the show, hit stop and keep it moving. Before we get to today's lovely guest, I wanted to make a couple recommendations in the spirit of continuing to amplify Black voices. First, I want to recommend the podcast Dunzo. It is so fucking good. It's hosted by Troy McGeady or McGeady. And I apologize, Troy, if I'm pronouncing your last name wrong. But Troy is so fucking funny. And he is a pop culture kindred spirit of mine. I listened to the most incredible deep dive of the Lady Gaga album Art Pop a couple weeks ago. It was like, I consider myself to be a pretty big Gaga fan, but the way Troy deep dives into pop culture and just like sifts through every nook and cranny of pop culture, from like celebrity relationships to albums to, he did an amazing episode on Mary-Kate and Ashley's When in Rome. I mean, just like his research, his observations, his humor is second to fucking none. And I know y'all are going to love it. So make sure to listen to Dunzo. And also, I want y'all to follow an Instagram account called Sir Candleman. Sir Candleman is this lovely gentleman who loves candles. And, you know, I love candles too. And he does unboxings, reviews, recommendations, and overall just like sparks joy. And I just think he's so fucking funny. And I love all of his candle recs. And I just love his like chic vibe. So make sure to follow Sir Candleman as well. Today's guest is an incredible actor, an incredible human, a wonderful friend, a beacon of wisdom and joy. We have Taylor Wisham on the podcast today. Taylor and I became friends in college, and then we bonded even more after we both lost our moms shortly after college, really young. And she's just the fucking best. We had an awesome conversation about our different college experiences due to internalized racism. We also talked about cutting our Barbie's hair and it not growing back. Who hasn't done that before? We talked about young adult romances and how they're depicted in movies, and how we sponged up that information and applied it to our own lives, clumsily so. We had a really, really great conversation and I had a great time. I know you're going to have a great time. You're going to fucking love Taylor. So I'm going to stop talking now. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Taylor Wisham. Okay, I am here with Taylor Wisham. Thank you so much for being here, Taylor.
Thank you so much for having me, Hannah Brown.
Oh my gosh, I feel so lucky to spend this glorious Friday morning with you.
Yeah, I didn't know it was Friday. I just walked my dog like 20, 30 minutes ago, mm-hmm. and it was on the way back into my house, and I was like, oh, today is Friday and not Saturday. Like, time has no meaning.
What even are days anymore? Wait, I feel like we talked about this a while ago, but I know you were busy at the beginning of quarantine because you were doing like virtual theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I want to hear about that too. But are you still working as well right now?
No.
Me neither.
I am so unemployed. I have been without an official job since the end of January. Because February, I programmed this like mini film festival thing at Stevenson High School.
Ooh.
And they paid us a really stupid amount of money to do a very easy task. So I was like, cool, I'm set. And then it was March and I had like applied to work at all these like event companies and do all this contract work. And then everything ended and I was like, oh, I'm just without a job.
Oh my gosh, love. Hence, what day of the week is it? Wait, before we get into the interview portion, I do want you to tell my listeners about the theater work you did in quarantine because it was really fucking cool.
Cool. Yeah. So, hello, everyone. I, along with a group of, there were 10 of us in total, co-produced this virtual online streaming theater festival called Quarantstream. That lasted about, it was a 7-day theater festival that every play was, it was all short 10-minute plays that were all streamed on Facebook Live, and then we left them up, and then we had all these captions to be very accessible. But it was wild. I think Liam, who started it, really just had this idea of like, how can we make theater happen in this realm, and we have no idea when theater is going to come back. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, let's do this festival. And we were like, cool, quick and dirty. Not that many people are going to apply. It's going to be like 5 plays maximum. And we ended up getting like almost 200 submissions from literally around the world. It was pretty wild. And then we ended up having about 80 plus artists over 5 days from like Ireland and Colombia and like all over the, like every time zone in America. Do these plays, and they were live streaming. So sometimes you'd be in, they'd be in a play and somebody's in Chicago and somebody else is in Ireland and they're like doing this play. But it went really well. There were a lot of kinks and a lot of Zoom mishaps. Mm-hmm. But we got, we got promoted on NPR, baby.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It's really weird that that actually happened. But we, yeah, so we did this virtual theater festival, and it went really well and people were really excited about it. And we didn't know how long quarantine was going to last. Mm-hmm. So we talked about doing another one, but then we were like, oh, this will be over soon, so let's not. And that was mid-April and mm-hmm. we're still here. So I don't know if we'll do another one, but yeah, it was a really nice way to kind of like get some creative juices flowing.
Yeah.
Because my God, I'm just sitting at home staring at my dog who's staring at the wall. What are we doing here?
Yeah. Yeah. Y'all like put that up really quick too. Cause I remember, what was it, like end of March?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember like seeing everything on Facebook and I was like, whoa, they worked fast.
Yeah. We did that like, well, cause we thought like, cause I think in Illinois, we had gone into like the first like lockdown or whatever, mm-hmm. shelter in place. Mm-hmm. We had gone into that March 17th. And so we were like, oh, it's supposed to be over the end of March, LOL. So we were like, we got to do it in the very beginning of April because everybody will be back at work. So we've got to go. Yeah. It was way too much work. There were so many, there was like the day we had to cast everything and like decide like who was directing what and what cast was going to what. I was in meetings from like noon, or no, that's not true. Maybe from like 2 p.m. until midnight. Like just like nonstop Zoom meetings, talking to people about what cast and who's doing. It was so much work. And then I did a large portion of like all the graphics we did. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like up late, like on Canva.com, which, hot tip, that's where you should go to make graphics, friends.
I love Canva.
I just decided to pay for a membership or whatever, because it's like $12.
Yeah.
So I could use all the professional things. But I'm like, Canva is such an easy way to pretend like you're a graphic designer.
Oh my gosh. I made my media kit on Canva and it makes me look like I know what I'm doing. And yes. I don't.
Hashtag not aspirational.
Hashtag not aspirational. That's amazing. I just have to say, Illinois State Free Stage wishes.
Oh my God, please. Illinois State. Oh my God. So I haven't, how do I give this? Because I forget people are probably listening, obviously, to this. Okay, so backstory for people who don't know what's happening. Hannah and I went to the same college, Illinois State University. I remember getting, are you in the SOTD alumni group on Facebook?
I like am, but I never get notifications.
I remember getting like invited by like Connie or Janet or somebody. And I was like, never, I'm not joining this.
Yes. I was very resistant,
but I saw somebody we went to school with posting about it on their personal page and was like, oh yeah, we're trying to like bring awareness to like the like microaggressions and the racism we experienced at ISU. And like, they were talking about this thread that was on that page. I'm like, well, let me go.
Yeah.
And the short version is that Anne Haugo is now the director of the theater department. She's the interim director, but will officially be the director in July. She posted about it. And she was like, if anybody has any input, please email me your thoughts so that we can incorporate it while we go into strategic planning. And I was like, crack my knuckles. Like,
yes.
So I sent her this long ass email telling her just like what did I even say? The short version was, please teach anti-racism at the School of Theater and Dance.
Yes.
And also, I just like went into this long ass tirade with like very specific requests on how she can address things mm-hmm. about like, I've been thinking about this so much about how like in theater schools, they never take into account like where you're coming from, like your socioeconomic background or things to make it equitable. Because when I think about the people at ISU who like soared and were the stars and everything, I'm like, well, these people also took years of voice lessons and dance, and they had like a fully funded like theater education program at their school.
Yeah.
So I'm like, obviously they're going to be better. And I just saw so many people just kind of get like left behind mm-hmm. if they weren't already there. So I wrote her and I was like, you have to start taking that into consideration. Cause like from like auditions and portfolios and all this stuff. And I told her about the time that I got put on probation sophomore year. Yeah, exactly. I got put
on probation. My face is shocked. What? I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely. I got put on probation between first semester and like second semester sophomore year. I was on probation because
I'm scared.
The acting faculty did not feel that I spoke up enough in class. Yes. They literally were like, you don't speak up enough. You always do your monologues last. We think you're very talented, but you go last. You're not participating enough.
So are you kidding me?
100%. And the only reason I got off probation is because they saw speech and debate and they were like, oh, you're talented. And I'm like, yeah, yes, obviously. And I just wrote this long thing. I've been thinking about this. This goes into one of the questions I know you're going to ask me. But I've been thinking about, I'm just like I replay what I wish I would have said in that meeting that I like now that I'm just older.
Yeah.
And so I just told Anne and I was just like, hey, I think it's really important that you have faculty that knows that it's their job to support and uplift and encourage people
yes.
and give students confidence and not just cater to the already confident. I'm like, the reason a lot of those kids are already confident is because they had years of training or like what have you, and they were the lead in every single show in high yeah. school. And it's like, at no point did any teacher just like be like, hey, Taylor, you're pretty quiet in class. Why is that?
Yes.
They were like, you're on probation because you don't speak up. And I'm like, that is the opposite of what we should be doing.
That's here. So insane. That's
pretty wild. But
oh my God.
I sent this long ass email and then she responded and asked me to be on some alumni like council. And I just okay. haven't responded.
Do you think that like you're going to have to go to ISU for meetings and they're going to put you up at the Marriott? One can only hope. Then you can go to Medici, get like a personal pan pizza, my personal favorite food on ISU campus. That's really crazy. Good for you. I will say like, good for you. And also, Anne Halgo has always been ahead of that program's time.
100%.
Like, I remember, like, she, like, had us read Fences and then, like, talked to us about, like, why August Wilson is, like, an important playwright and, like, went yeah. into it. And I remember, like, a specific student who will remain nameless being like, I don't care about this. And yeah. shocker, it was a straight white man. And yeah. I remember Anne was, like, shamed him in the middle of class and was like, I don't understand why. Like, she was like, here's why that's a really fucked up thing to say. And here's why you should care. And I'm so sorry that I'm asking you to read content that doesn't resonate with you as a white person. Like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Amazing.
On that thread, though, I won't name what teacher it is, but while mm-hmm. we were at ISU, the person who taught, like, theater history mm-hmm. literally wrote, like, some long-ass apology on this thread about mm-hmm. how they taught, like, let's say the theater history book had 17 chapters, and the last chapter was about Asian and African theater mm-hmm. and they said they specifically like taught all like 16 out of 17 and just never taught the 17th one because they didn't think it was that important. Oh, and so they apologized on this thread and I was just like, that's the most wild thing I've ever heard.
That's so crazy. I also remember I fucking hated carrying around that theater history book because it was so big.
It's so big and like $200. Why is any book in the world $200?
$200. That's so true though, what you said about like the inherent confidence you have when you come from the socioeconomic background to allow you to like go to those summer programs and those specific classes. Like I remember my ISU headshot was taken, like my mom put a white sheet over my shower And I put on a black t-shirt and like a cute necklace. And she curled my hair and I posed. And like, that was fucking it.
Yes. My sophomore headshot was literally me on my mom's like condo balcony, like trying to get like just like cropped enough by the trees. And she was just like, smile. And I was like, yes. And then I went to Walgreens and I printed it out.
Yes. I was like, okay, 8x10. Let's get this done.
Oh my God. Yeah.
On my podcast, I'm always like, I loved college. It was so amazing. I had such a great time. And obviously, with the conversation we're having as a country about the anti-Black racism in the United States, and then the Facebook status that you posted being like, hey, my experience at ISU was fucking hell. And it really made me like reevaluate like what my place was in that program and like how fucking different it must have been for you. And I, yeah. You know, I mean, I don't want to be like, I'm so sorry, because I know you don't need that. But fuck, thank you for like being vulnerable and sharing those stories with us too.
Yeah. Do you know what though? After that post, the one thing that I haven't like made a video about this, but I probably will, mm-hmm. of like specifically like what I asked in that video in at the end of that post was like, hey, if you feel guilty about what I've just said, keep that to yourself and don't come to me. And yeah. I can't tell you how many text messages or DMs I got from people being like, I saw your post and I'm so sorry and all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't care about your apology. Like, what yeah. did I do that? That was like 7 years ago. Like, figure it out. I let you know my experience so you can go read a book and like not be like that anymore.
Right.
And it was just more so for me to be able to just like speak to it and be like, actually, that was a pretty like trash ass experience I had for 4 years. Mm-hmm. It was good in a lot of ways, but like it could have been way better. And yeah, it's just like, it just reminded me of like how rare it is for people to like not listen to Black people as if we don't know what we need or what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so I'm probably going to make something about it. I just haven't recorded it yet. My therapist was like, just make sure it's not like, it's not me trying to avoid confrontation or being passive aggressive. And I was like, mm-hmm. it's not Brittany. I promise you. Like, okay. I like went into a whole tirade about it. I was like, they never listen to Black women and we deserve to be heard and respected. And they crossed my boundaries. But yeah, I appreciate you not apologizing, because I get text messages from people being like, hey Taylor. So I just wanted to remind you about this really terrible racist thing I did to you or said around
you. Oh my God.
And so I just feel so bad about that. And I want you to know the work I'm doing to like be better. And it's like 9 times out of 10 stuff I do not recall.
You're like, cool. I get to relive that now. Thank you so much.
100%. I'm just sitting there like, wow, that was really terrible that I had to go through that. And honestly, I honestly think that I might have just like disassociated through a lot of ISU.
Yeah.
Because I like just don't remember things. I'm like, I remember the street I lived on and some bars and some stuff. But like there's plenty of stuff. Like the way that people look back on college so fondly, like you have such a good recall on stuff about ISU and like where you went and what house you were at. And yeah, we went to Stevenson and all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, until I listened to the episode with Clayton, I forgot Stevenson was a building. So there we go.
Yes. Oh my God. Stevenson was right in front of Watterson, and walking through Watterson with the smell of Subway filling my nostrils at 7 a.m. was a mood and a vibe that I don't ever need to have again.
Yes. Talk about a Subway pizza.
The flex dollars.
Yes.
Yes. I will say too, because I messaged you privately about this a while ago, that monologue about I want like no son of a bitch cuts down trees where I live. And yeah. I want cats and I want bread and I want, you know, and I'm going back to the Waffle House. So many people did that monologue. And Taylor, I'm not just like like blowing smoke up your ass. I only remember you doing that monologue because it was so fucking good. And I remember another monologue you did that was like dramatic and like really fucking sad. And it was about like someone hitting you. And that one made me cry. And then I remember your performance in speech and debate. So like, fuck your probation. I'm so sorry that happened to you. You're wildly talented. And I have never forgotten any of your performances.
Well, thank you. I didn't remember that waffle monologue until you texted me about that waffle monologue. I was like, oh my God, I did do that. I used to use that all the time. Like that's like a good monologue. It's not even, I'm going back to the Waffle House.
You were so fucking good at it though, because it was such a visual monologue. And I remember like every teacher would always give the same fucking note. Like, I want you to see the pieces of bread and see the cats. And I just remember like with you, it was so natural and conversational. And it wasn't like, I'm an actor making choices. Like, you just did the thing. It's amazing.
Yeah. It was also rough. Like, this is going to sound really petty, or not petty. This is going to make me sound like an asshole, but it was rough sometimes at ISU or in any acting class that I think I've ever taken to watch the people who aren't getting it. I don't want to say not good, but just aren't really. And you're like, man, like, I really wish you could connect to the words you're saying or be a person. And it's just like, I just remember at ISU, like, the fact that there were people like senior year who I still felt that way about. And I was like, this is a testament to the program.
Yeah.
And why these people are still at the same place they were as freshmen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also remember like watching actors take notes and be like, okay, okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And then they would do it again and it would be exactly the fucking same. Yeah. And I'm like, listen, I'm sure I've done that too. I'm not saying I'm like, you know, Meryl Streep over here, but I was like, okay, none of that. You said okay a million times and none of it seeped into your pores or your brain or anything.
You were like, I don't know what you mean at all. Yeah.
Thank you for having that conversation with me.
Sure. Of course. I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, you're an open book, Taylor. And yeah. I feel like the last time you were on this podcast, back when it was Brown Eyed Unicorn, we talked about our moms passing away. And that is still an episode I get so much positive feedback on. And people are like, oh my gosh, I really appreciate that. And when I share your posts on Instagram, people are like, oh my God, love her.
Yes, yes. I still get people who will comment on my grief brief videos, despite the fact that I abandoned it like 2 years ago.
Oh,
and like,
so good.
I still have stuff to put up, but I'm like, damn, it's been like 2 years. But I still get people who like, surprisingly, my most popular video is when I talk about like anticipatory grief and like anticipatory dying, and people are like, and it's always the same sad comment. I mean, which I understand because you really only watch grief videos if they're relevant to you, but it's always people being like, yes, my X, Y, and Z loved one is about to die or just died and I couldn't figure out, or just got diagnosed with a disease and they're gonna die and I can't figure out why I'm crying all the time. And it's like, oh, because I'm anticipating them dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I still get people who like will stumble upon it randomly. Somebody subscribed like this week. I was like, I don't know how you found this video.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I remember the workshop we went to right around the holidays, which I'm sure we talked about the last time you were on here, but I was so thankful to have you there because I was like, this is a really fucking depressing, like weird experience.
Those are so odd. Cause it's like, there's this, yes, those are very odd. But I joined this, I don't know if I talked about this the last time, I joined, there's this like organization, I think they're a nonprofit called The Dinner Party. And essentially they're all over the country. There's like 20,000 people participate or something. And it's literally like that you sign up and if somebody close to you has died, essentially, you sign up and you get assigned a host that lives close to you. And about like once a month or every other month, you and a group of like seven other people all go to this person's house and like have dinner and a potluck and you just like hang out. And then at some point you start talking about the dead people, you know, and
it's like not funny, but it sounds funny.
It's like one of those things too, where it's like, it was really, I only went to one. I'm a part of a table, but like they keep planning stuff every time I'm busy. And then they've been having like Zoom dinner parties. And I'm like, I've never met these people. I don't really want to sit on Zoom for 3 hours to talk about my dead mother.
No.
But I do recommend it if people are listening.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I have never heard of that.
Yeah, it's cool, but it is weird. It's like definitely this, like, it's nice though, because there's people who like, who's, loved one died like 5-6 years ago. And then there's people who like their sister died like 2 weeks ago. And so it's like a nice balance of incredibly sad and just like, oh, this is what life is like after you lose somebody.
Totally. Yeah. I remember the thing we went to, and that one girl talked at the very end about how she lost her husband like on their wedding night. And he was like 32 or like really fucking young. And it was super spontaneous. And we were just like,
yeah, it's like, you think you got it bad. Like that's,
yeah, I know. That's the thing. I'm like, I'm not saying this is a competition of grief here, but like that is straight up fucked up and terrible and should never happen to anybody.
No, I'm like, you won. Like if it was a competition,
you won.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. On that note, Tay, I want to get into you more. Okay. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in, the short answer is I grew up in the south suburbs of Illinois. Mm-hmm. The roundabout answer, if people want to start my Wikipedia page, is that I was born in LA County in Long Beach. I lived in LA for like 2 years, and then I moved to Hawaii and I lived there for 3 years.
Oh my God.
When I was about five is when we moved to Illinois, and I grew up in the south suburbs.
Wait. This is why I fucking love this new format, because like I've been friends with you for how long, and I didn't know that you lived in Hawaii.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite facts, even though I was like super young and only remember like three things about it.
What do you remember?
I remember going to the beach for the first time and stepping in the ocean on a shell that like kind of cut, like, you know, you ever get a cut like in like your baby toe, and then that whatever that other toe is next to it?
Yes.
It like cut right there, and I just remember crying, and it was salt water, so you know, it was painful.
Ah.
I remember a terrible argument my mother and father got into, which is like a huge part of like, he had so many issues, which is why we moved. And I remember going to preschool, and I had a group of friends, and we were in preschool, and I remember this girl who I was friends with pouring sand in my hair. And for years, I thought it was a dream, until I was like middle school, high school. I remember just asking my mom, I'm like, I just always thought I had dreamed it and I made it up. And I was like, oh yeah, like I always have this dream about this thing that happened. And she's like, that was the real, that happened.
Oh my God, that's like traumatic.
Yeah. Oh, and I also remember having like my, I guess it had to be my fourth birthday, and I got one of those, I had a sleepover, and I got one of those like Barbie car things we could drive. And so we lived in this big apartment complex in Oahu, and we like took it down and we just drove around by like the laundry room, and it was like the best day.
That's so fun. I always wanted one of those cars.
Yeah.
Did you get to bring it with you on the move?
No, my mom sold like everything for us moving. I mean, I get it, because I mean, it was the 90s, but also moving from Hawaii to Illinois is probably incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
So she sold everything. Because when we moved here, we moved in with my aunt and uncle who lived in the south suburbs. And mm-hmm. we stayed with them for like 2 months before my mom found us a place. But like, yeah, she sold everything. I used to have, except the weird thing is, now that I think about it, I don't know how I got that. I used to have a life-size Barbie that looked just like me. And it had like, we had matching dresses. And I got it. I know I got it for Christmas from my uncle who lives in Hawaii. I got it for Christmas, like when I was like 3 or 4. And I had it until I was like 13. Cause I would like, I cut her hair once and then realized it wouldn't grow back.
That's amazing. Life-size Barbies were the shit. I never had one, but like, I always wanted to have the matching dress situation. Yes,
you have to. It's just like, you have a friend, you can just talk to them. Yeah, crazy. I was an only child. I needed all the friends I could get.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I fully cut like several Barbies' hair before. And it was like, it was like, I felt like Sid from Toy Story, just like fucking my Barbie up. And I'm like, what? That's like, because there were a few where my sister and I were just like, we're just going to fuck with these Barbies. Like, we don't really love them.
No, it's like, let's just see how short it can go. Yeah. Can I like color it with some markers?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. I remember one time we cut one of my Barbie's hair and we were like, oh, she looks like Meg Ryan now. And she didn't.
Oh, yeah. And then I remember just like cutting it and being like, it's okay. Like before I realized that they weren't people and it wouldn't grow back, I'm like, it's fine. It'll grow back and we'll cut it again. My mom had to be like, that's not how that works. She's like, well, I don't know why you did that.
Oh, that's so funny. What was junior high like for you?
What was junior high? I look back on every period of my life and understand, particularly, I get a lot of insight about like my own personal romantic life and why it's just been bleak for so long. Mm-hmm. Middle school. I mean, I was middle school. So how much romance are you going to get when you're 12?
But you want so much.
You want it. And then I have such a problem with every film that tells you that like, you're going to go to middle school and high school and have these incredible romances and they're going to be so amazing. And like, I remember you, when did I hear you talk? I don't remember if you posted about this on Instagram or if you talked about it on your podcast about Sleepover, the movie.
Yes.
And how like, there's that scene, like when Alexa Vega is on the skateboard.
Yes.
And then what's his face with that mole on his face?
Sean Ferris.
Yes. And he's like, whoa. I can't tell, I loved that movie, but I cannot tell you how many times that situation happens over and over in films and how many times I was convinced that's all it took.
Yes.
You just have to look at, do you want to know something really embarrassing? So it's like in that moment, like in that same vein of like, all you need is like somebody to just think you're really interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's how they fall for you.
Mm-hmm.
I convinced myself, and I did this throughout college, that if I was like on a walk, like sometimes like coming back from parties or something, and like, let's say a guy was like, I'm going to walk you home. I'm like, that's so nice. I would think all I have to do is seem interesting. So I would look up at the trees as if we're walking by. Mm-hmm. And then I would lift my hand up and just yank a leaf off the tree. And then I would just, as I'm walking, just start ripping the leaf.
Oh my gosh, you are like a one woman indie film right now.
Yes, no, I'm like manic pixie dream girl.
Yes,
rip this leaf off this tree, walk and rip the leaf apart and tear it to shreds, and this is how you're gonna realize I'm so amazing. Like what? Like,
I mean, that's incredible. I will say, like, A Walk to Remember made me think that, like, unless I was literally dying, Shane West would never love me. And so, yeah. Like, I don't think I got the right lesson out of that movie at all. I was, like, 12 years old being like, if I just got, like, not, like, dying, but if yes. I just got, like, really sick, then everyone would apologize and, like, be nice to me.
Have you ever had, like, this is going to be so twisted. Have you ever had, like, a sick fantasy? Like, if you got sick, like, oh, I can finally say these things. Or everybody would come to my hospital bed.
Yes.
I can tell them all the things I need. And I'm like, you have to listen to me finally.
Yes. Yes. You know, yeah. Sorry. Keep going.
No. It's just like, I just want to tell people like, I've always loved you and like, you should have loved me.
Yes. Okay. Honestly though, like my mom was literally like in hospice, like having a lucid moment. And she literally said out loud, finally, it's all about me. And it's because she spent her entire life like putting her needs last. And she was like, I am literally on my deathbed. And all you all want to do is suddenly now see what I need, ask me what I need, like check in on me. And she admitted that out loud. And I was like, you know, mom, I'm with you. You're right.
Yeah, 100%. Like that's like, it's like, I'd like to have that moment and then not die.
Yes, exactly. Like miraculously, it's like in a movie where like someone flatlines and then it's like, boop.
Yes,
100%. And everyone's like, you're alive.
It's like, remember all those things I did? We're all going to change now.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are like also so many, like, I feel like childhood movies where like someone like almost dies, but then they don't. Like, I feel that happens a lot. Like, or in a Troll in Central Park where he like turns into a statue for a second and then he like unstatues.
Yeah. Or just like generally depressing children's movies. Like, My Girl is devastating.
Oh my God.
What movie am I thinking of? There's this movie with Haley Joel Osment where he's like a robot or he's artificial intelligence.
Yes, AI.
That is a depressing ass film. That is not good. Like, I mean, it's fine. It's a fine movie, but like,
it's so sad.
You're like, oh, I'm gonna watch Haley Joel Osment. He's so famous right now. Oh my gosh, yes. And then you're just crying.
Yeah.
At the end of the film. And I'm like, this was a depressing experience.
For me. Yeah. Do you remember like, cause in the end he like finally becomes a real boy and he's like, I think he's like about to die or something at the end. And then the little teddy bear who like will never die because he's a robot is just sitting there like waiting for him to like wake up and hang out with him. And that's like the end of the movie.
Devastating.
And then like Bicentennial Man. I feel like the early 2000s like loved a robot, like a depressing robot movie.
Bicentennial Man. I have not watched that since the early 2000s. I can't. I cannot. Either.
And now that Robin Williams is gone, I'm like, I cannot go there with you.
No, I'm not ready. Maybe when I'm like 55.
Yeah. I'm like really ready for like a juicy cry.
Exactly. Oh, but your question was about middle school. Yes. So I took a lot of these films and things I was learning from Lizzie McGuire and That's So Raven about and Zoe 101 and every DCOM original. But I took all of these things and I internalized them and I said, that's what my life is going to be. Mm-hmm. And that's not what my life was. And I was just confused. Mm-hmm. Generally, I was poorly dressed. I mean, there are some terrible photographs from middle school. I was like super nerdy. It wasn't until college, maybe, or after college did I realize I spent a lot of my time doing very nerdy things, but thinking they were really cool. So I was in band, but I quit band because orchestra, or no, I was in orchestra, but I quit orchestra because band was cooler.
Mm-hmm.
So I played the violin for a year, and then I went and I did clarinet for like a year or two, but then I left all of that to do choir because that was the coolest. Mm-hmm. And then I also did theater. And just like Clayton, I was in Beauty and the Beast in like eighth grade, but I wanted to be the wardrobe so bad. And I remember looking at this girl who was the wardrobe thinking I should have been the wardrobe. And I like was just a townsperson whose big moment was to get knocked over by, what is that man's name? The big one, Gustav?
Gaston.
No. Gaston.
Gustav.
By Gaston's like little friend, he yeah. like knocked me over, and like that's my big moment. But then I just sang in the chorus the whole time. But so I did a lot of activities. I was like, I was in a yearbook club, and I did student government and all that stuff. And then middle school is really when the train started rolling on my falling in love with gay men and not knowing that I was falling in love with gay men.
Oh, devastating.
Over and over. And there was this huge crush I had. The first one was like one of my best friends. And I was just like, oh, this would be so perfect. Like huge amount of feelings, like as much feeling as you can have at 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember in like seventh grade, and it got really big, like rumors in eighth grade that he was gay. And I would just be like, no, you guys, he's not gay. Don't even like, just leave him alone and let him be. And they're like, Taylor, why are you like trying to waste your time on this man, like this boy? And I should have known. They were correct. They were absolutely correct. But I was like literally the last one to, I was like the last person he came out to.
When did he come out?
I feel like he came out like freshman or sophomore year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it was a three-way call between me and our other really good friend, because he didn't want to tell me alone. So I'm like in my bedroom, and he's like telling me, and I'm just like devastated that everybody was correct. And I remember he was supposed to be my date to the eighth grade dance, but he kept telling me what I needed to wear, and like that we needed to do a like color matching thing and to figure mm-hmm. out what fabrics I was wearing and all this stuff. And I remember getting so fed up about it, plus hearing everybody in my ear telling me that like he doesn't like you, that I wrote him a letter, and I told him I didn't want to go to the dance with him anymore because he kept trying to be controlling and telling me what to do.
Yeah.
At the end of it, I wrote, because you know how everybody's like, oh, it's not you, it's me. Mm-hmm. I wrote, it's not me, it's you.
You went there, Taylor.
I really did. I was like, wow, what confidence she had.
Yes.
But yeah, middle school was like fine. I had a lot of friends that my mom was really good at knowing who was a good friend for me way before I was knowing all the time.
Yep.
And I would be like, I would really overcompensate for like the lack of like depth in a lot of my friendships by being the person who like, if it was Valentine's Day, I went to the dollar store and I got like 25 little lotions and I'm going to give them out to all of my friends and like do all these, and I'm going to decorate all of my friends' lockers. And my mom's like, who decorates your locker, Taylor? Your birthday's in August and nobody decided to decorate your locker when you came back to school. She's like, these people are not your friends. And I'm like, mom, they are my friends. No, I don't talk to a single one of those people.
Oh my gosh. Debbie knew.
She knew.
Yeah. My mom would like, she would totally do the same thing where she'd be like, you know, Hannah, I just don't know about that girl. Yes. I tell you. She's like, you know, I feel like every time I hear you on the phone with her, you have to downplay, you have to dim your sparkle every time you're on the phone with her. Yes. And I just don't know if and I'd get so defensive too. I'd be like, mom, you don't know. She's really nice. And yes, then like yes. a month later, I'd be crying over the same girl over and over. And my mom would be like, why are we still doing this?
Yes.
Mom.
I also like, I just feel very passionate that there are so many movies for kids and teens about romance and like adventure and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And there's not enough about friendships. Mm-hmm. And because I feel like that takes so much more of an emotional toll and can be way more scarring if like it goes south
yeah.
than, you know, some little rinky dink relationship you had at 14.
That's so true. I was thinking about like there are those really like aggressive movies about bullying, like Cyber Bully, that like ABC Family Original and like Etc. I feel like Alexa Vega was in one. Maybe that was the one she was in. No, Cyber Bully was with Emily Osment.
Yes.
Alexa Vega was in Odd Girl Out, I think is what it was called.
Yes. Oh my God.
Fucked up movie.
Yes.
And there's so many movies about like aggressive bullying, but it's like, where is that middle ground of like, someone's not trying to like literally ruin your life or like slut shame you on a website, but they are like a bad friend. And like, how do you navigate that as a person and as like a kid?
Yes. There's not enough conversations about it. There's not enough conversations about like, I think this is true no matter what your gender identity is. Like, oftentimes your friendships are way more impactful and way more important than most of your relationships.
Yes.
And it's like, ending a friendship can be like just as, if not worse, like in terms of a devastation scale, than like ending a romantic relationship. And like, we never see those things of like, what is it like to grow apart from a friend? What is it like to put in work with friendships? Like as an adult, my God, it's very, I don't know. It's so much work to have friends. My God.
Oh my gosh. I know. I feel like, we're towards the end of our 20s at this point. And there are so many friendships where I'm like, kind of like, okay, how deep does this really go? Mm-hmm. Do we just like get a drink once a year and it, like we have a great time, but like if I'm going through something, like you're not someone I'm going to call, like you kind of like recategorize your friendships.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it's like, I can't just get on the phone and call all my friends crying. They're like a chosen few, you know?
They're very few. And like my therapist and I, like we've been talking about friendships for a long time. And she was like, I don't want to sound callous, but I'm just going to say it. She was like, I think you should just make a list, like a totem pole of where people fall in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she, like exactly what you said, like all of our friends aren't going to serve all of the same purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also hard because it's like, oh, here's somebody I really care about, but we don't really know much like in-depthness about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the person I'm going to literally sob to for the next 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And like being okay that those are like different things that people possess and you get from them.
Yeah. Oh, that's important. But it's a lot of work too. And it can be kind of a rude awakening when you really do sit down and you think about like, fuck, like is that person who I labeled like, you know, best friend or whatever, or really close friend actually like living up to that title? Or are they more of like, you were talking about this on Instagram literally yesterday, I think, like a friend versus acquaintance. And like, how do you use those words?
Yes, yeah. Because I've been thinking so much about friendships over the last year and just like how my friendships have evolved, how they are evolving with friends that I have who are married or now have kids, or just like we're in different stages of our lives and like, how do I want those friendships to look? But also just thinking about how I formed friendships in the past and how many friendships I have that I have like formed from, bonding and like trauma or bonding in misery. And we're like, oh my God, we both fucking hate this job, so that is why we're friends now. Yeah. And then like when you're like kind of like in a happier, lighter place, you don't know how to like still be friends with that person.
Yeah.
We're used to being like at this like low energy vibration of like, we fucking are miserable. But yeah, I was talking about how like, to me, friend is a verb.
Mm-hmm.
And friend is like an action. Like it's not just something you are. It's like, how are you participating in this person's life? And how are you an active participant? What does that look like? It doesn't have to look the same for everybody. But I just find that like so many people are like, oh, this is my friend, especially with everything that is like headline news right now. I'm just like, how many white people are counting me as one of their black friends? And I'm like, don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm like, if I haven't talked to you in 2020, we are not friends. Like, if I haven't checked in on you, if I haven't even just been like, hey, thinking about you, happy birthday. Like,
yeah.
We're not friends. And that is okay. I think people are so afraid of like they just want all these friends. And like, I also like, I'm just like, I don't have time to be like, this is my best friend, this is my closest friend, this is my really good friend. I'm like, what does that mean? I'm like, these are my friends and these are all the people I know. Like, those are two separate categories.
Yeah.
There's strangers, there's people I know, and then there are my friends. And there's I know a lot of people. I am friends with a small amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, retweet. Agree. Yeah. Yeah. But I do think like, especially now, like, I'm sure you have so many people coming out of the woodwork being like, Taylor, like, you're like one of my closest friends. And you're like, come on.
Literally. Yes. And it's, they're just like, oh, I'm thinking about you. Let me know if you need anything. And I'm like, you person who I haven't spoken to in 2 years, I'm not going to ask you for a single thing. And like, you know what? You can read a book. That's the most.
Yes.
And you can do that over there and pretend like you don't know me. And like my favorite text I got from a white person in the last like month was one of my friends just texted me and she was like, you don't even have to respond to this. She was just like, I'm here if you need me. And I was like, yes. And I didn't respond. She wasn't asking anything of me. Cause sometimes I think when people like, in general, when people are like apologizing to you or like lamenting because they feel so bad about something,
yeah,
they like want you to make them feel better.
Yes. Like absolve them of their guilt.
Yes. And I'm like, it is not my responsibility to make you feel better at all.
Yes.
So like, what do you want me to do with this right now? I literally had somebody it's Friday now. So maybe on Monday, like one of those, like, I'm so sorry for the racism that I caused towards you. And I'm just like, okay, person I haven't spoken to in 4 years.
Yeah.
They were responding to it like, whatever, they're never going to listen to this. They they sent me, they might, people will hover over me, but like they sent me this question, like maybe 2017, mm-hmm. They're a teacher. And they literally asked me, why is it that the black kids in their class are more disruptive than the white students? Literally asked me that. And I was just like, they're like, I don't want to seem rude.
What?
Yes. No, I
texted you this morning. I was like, because it's Juneteenth when we're recording this, you guys. And I was like, I feel like in advance, I have to apologize on behalf of white people for any foolishness that happens today. And I just like, come on.
Oh, exactly. They literally said, I'm not trying to make you speak for all black people and asking, but I do want to understand if this is a cultural thing, because that would change how I handle these situations. Because these kids in the class just are disruptive and they don't wait their turn to speak. So they're like they don't raise their hand to answer questions. They just like will respond to the teacher. And I was just like, this isn't a cultural thing. I literally said being disruptive is not a cultural or a black thing.
Oh my God.
I was like, there's a lot of reasons. They could just be enthusiastic to respond to your question. Like, I was like, you should probably talk to their teachers or their parents about it.
Yeah.
If it's like a big issue, or just figure out other ways you can like handle your, like just set a precedent of like, this is how you will respond to questions. Like, what? And then they messaged me, 6 days ago, apologizing.
For that comment?
Asking me to speak for black people. And the racism they perpetrated towards me. And I just reacted with a thumbs up. And that was it. I'm like, I haven't even spoken to you since you asked me that question.
Oh my God. That is fucking wild. I apologize on behalf of my fellow white people who say shit like that to you, because that is not okay. What was your first job?
My first job was working in the cafeteria of Waterson.
I forgot you worked at Waterson. What was that like?
Terrible, but like also fun, but also terrible. I started as a host, which was such a stupid job to have in the first place, because my job was to, because Waterson was under construction still or whatever, partially.
Yes.
So my literal only job was to tell students, don't go to the left. Like they walk up the giant stairs.
Yes.
The cash register, for those of you who've never been to Waterson, you walk up these giant staircases. If you turn to your left is where the cash register is, where you swipe your card to get in. And if you turn to the right, it was just where kids would come out and exit. My job was to stand there and tell them to go to the left where the cash register is so they could swipe in, and to make sure nobody, like, because people would just come in and just like not pay and go through the other side.
I would do that.
Yeah,
today.
I don't blame people. It's like, what are you going to do? And so I would get yelled at, because sometimes I would help the cash, like the cash register, the cashiers or whatever, like check people in. And then there was this bitchy manager, like this old lady who would always get so mad at me if I talked to them.
Oh my God.
I'm like, they're literally 20 feet away from me, but I'm not supposed to talk to them. Like it's like 10 a.m. Like no student is coming to get food right now. or yeah. So I would get in trouble for that. And then my senior year, I stayed on ISU's campus between sophomore and junior year, and then definitely junior to senior year. So sophomore to junior year, I stayed and I worked in the dining hall, and then I just worked the dining hall all throughout senior year. And I used to work like every different position. Mm-hmm. Dishwashing was the best because you didn't have to talk to anybody. You would get soaking wet, but you could just stand for 3 hours and just speak to no one. Mm-hmm. The worst part though is like as workers, we would get yelled at if we took food. Like we would get like threatened with getting fired if we took food.
What?
That we didn't like pay for. And I'm like, having worked there, they would literally just dump out buckets and buckets of like burgers and fries at the end of the night. So it's like, why are you yelling at me? Like when you're wasting food?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's wild. I always like, now that you mentioned that, I do like have fond memories of like always seeing the kids who worked in the dining centers, like having fun at work together and like Absolutely. Joking around and stuff. Oh, there was one guy who worked at the dining center at Waterson who I thought was really hot. And I always like hoped he was working when I was eating. Nothing ever happened there.
In our very cute red little polo shirts.
Yes.
Terrible black pants. A terrible outfit. Horrible. Yeah, no. I also liked working like the taco, like, cause I could make like quesadillas and burritos.
Oh,
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, those burritos. It was like, God, that dining center was fucking amazing. I really liked the panini makers.
Like, what high quality? What class?
When they got the flatbread, like, it was over for me. I was like, okay, flatbread paninis every fucking day. What was your favorite outfit that you wore to a school dance?
Favorite outfit. It is a tie between what I wore to my junior prom, because I was the class treasurer, because that was the only position that nobody was also competing for. Mm-hmm. So I was the class treasurer. And for whatever reason, as a junior, you get to plan the prom. So it's not the senior class that does it. So we planned the entire prom. It was at the Field Museum.
Oh, that's sick.
And then we got to like, I remember getting to leave school to like go do like catering testing and like test that, like eat all the food that like and pick the menu. It was so high class. But I wore this like mauve colored like spaghetti strap dress that was like an empress waist. Mm-hmm. And like it just like flowed down with like all these pleats in it. And it was like, yeah, purple. And I really loved that dress. I look back on it now and I'm like, was it as good as I thought it was? Maybe not. But that was one. And then somewhere in like, when did I cut my hair? So it had to be somewhere like junior year. I had this short black dress that I wore that had this, that was also an empress waist, big on the empress waist, mm-hmm. and had like a white bow tie thing. And it was all pleated. And then it got destroyed in the dry cleaners because I only worked one dance. And I remember I was going to wear it to like homecoming or something again. So we took it to the dry cleaners and they steamed out all of the pleats. And I remember feeling so bad because I did not grow up with money at all. And I remember that dress was like $60 or something.
Oh.
They like gave my mom $60 because they ruined it because it just didn't even look right anymore. But it was a cute dress while it lasted. It was way too short though. I'm shocked I wore it.
Oh, I love like a short dress that's either like yeah, like an empire waist or like a shift dress.
Yeah.
Anything that I could like dance in and I could like comfortably eat in and not feel mm-hmm. like I couldn't breathe. Like that was always like the dream.
Yeah. But the danger for me is like always like the bending over process because you don't realize how much is being exposed of your ass until people start telling you, or they never tell you.
Yeah. You're like, you're welcome.
That happened at my mom's funeral. I wore this like lacy, like this like short, like lace black dress. It's a very cute dress, but I didn't realize because I was dating somebody at the time, and it wasn't until like we went home and he told me that every time I bent over, you could see my ass and like my underwear. And I was like, I was bending over all the time. I was picking up stuff. Why didn't you tell me this information prior? Yeah. Like it's over now. So apparently everybody kept seeing my ass throughout my mom's funeral.
Oh my gosh, what a wild time. I remember like being at my mom's funeral and feeling like I was, again, like a one woman indie film, like in my black dress with like a pearl earring and like her hair clip in my hair, just being like, mm. And I always like imagined myself being like a frail little like Natalie Portman, like, mm, like at my mom's funeral, which is so fucked up. But like, you know, it's what happens when you grow up watching movies and like loving movies.
Absolutely. No,
and I just like ate bagels all day and like cried.
Yeah, no. My mom's funeral was really nice. And I remember just being like I spent a lot of money on this hotel, like the, what would you call it? Like a, not a ballroom, but like a room that was, really, it was just like a really pretty room in the suburbs. And I just remember being really pleased with myself the whole time because it looked so nice. And I like paid for like a mimosa bar.
Ooh, that's fun.
And I was like, yeah, this is really quite a party.
Yes, it's an eleganza extravaganza in honor of Debbie.
Yeah.
Which cartoon character would you fuck or make out with if you could?
Okay, cartoon character. I would say it is a I don't think that Debbie Thornberry from The Wild Thornberries gets enough attention. Mm-hmm. I just think like plaid shirt, some chill jeans, like she really did that.
After we recorded this, Taylor like wanted, she DM'd me and was like, I would like to make an addendum and an apology for my answer because I have more answers. She wanted me to add to the episode. She had a crush on Casper of Christina Ricci fame, the CGI Casper, Spinelli from Recess, honestly same, and Tuxedo Mask from Sailor Moon. Sailor Moon was sensuous. So just so you know, those are three additional cartoon crushes of Taylor's. Okay, back to the episode.
When you have like your sexual awakening and you're just sitting there and you're like, oh, I feel funny. What so is that feeling?
Deeply confused.
Yeah. You're like another, a part of your body that is activated that you didn't know existed.
Who would your celeb bestie be and why?
This is such a tricky question because I think we're like in the dawn of the age of like, we have to stop idolizing celebrities because a lot of them are stupid. Or they make like the Imagine video or I Take Responsibility. Like they have to be stopped.
Bad. Bad.
Like embarrassing. Who is my celeb? I feel very strongly that I think myself and Dan Levy, who created Schitt's Creek and started it, I feel like we would be really good friends. Like I'm just like pretty positive about that. That's just going to happen.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe like an Amanda Seals or a Kiki Palmer I would get along with just because they like to talk a lot. And I also like to talk a lot and we're very opinionated. I feel like that's really it. I'm trying to like diversify my feed and like listen to people who like, you know, I've read a book as opposed to people who just like to like be outside in the sun and take photos. So
yeah,
I'm in this like weird phase of like, who should I like admire?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is like, that's so true. Like part of the, you know, adulting process is being like, who do I actually look up to for like good concrete reasons? And like, versus just like, oh, you're like pretty.
100%. I just like unfollowed like over the last couple weeks, like all the reality stars. Well, not all of them. Some of them I still follow. But a lot of like the reality stars that I like followed after I watched like Love is Blind. I'm like, I must know what they're up to. Like, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm actually about to do a purge like that too, because I'm just like, I'm not interested
at all.
Just bullshit Instagram accounts.
Well, also I follow too many people. I just had this conversation with people yesterday. Like, there is no reason why I need to follow 1,300 people. Like I see the same maybe 30 or 40 people on my Instagram.
Yes.
That's it. And then you like scroll through and when you're like, I don't even know who this is. I don't know what this company is. I don't know. Just unfollow, unfollow, unfollow.
Yes. It's such a cleansing feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and really quick, one more addendum. Taylor wanted me to add Ira Madison III to her list of ideal celebrity besties. And again, agree. Ira Madison III is the shit. And if you're not following him, you should. And you should also listen to his podcast, Keep It. Okay, bye. Those are good celebrity besties. I think I really look forward to the day where you and Dan Levy are just like having a chic dinner somewhere in LA together.
With his glasses and his eyebrows.
Yes. And like, then you'll both have like an impassioned conversation and like eat delicious food and drink delicious drinks.
I can't wait. And like, I've seen some of his like Instagram lives and he has like a nice house too. So I can't like, also let's pause. Where you are right now is, I just want everyone to know, Hannah lives in a, do you live there now, by the way?
I have imposter syndrome.
It is very nice. It's got these like wood beams on the ceiling. Okay. Arch walkways. It's got like several chairs. And I've seen your Instagram. If you're not following Hannah on Instagram, her lovely little dinners, there's some type of outdoor section as well where she can be. It's a very lovely home. Hannah has come up regardless of if she's on the lease or not.
Oh my God. Thank you so much, Taylor. Also, I cannot wait for you to someday live in Los Angeles because then we can have wine nights and dinners in yes. this very home.
It's so nice. Like, congrats, Jake. Come
through. Oh my
through.
God. Thank you. Hair flip. Yeah. Do you have a revenge fantasy?
Yes, of course I do.
Yes, tell me.
Okay, so I have several. A lot of them are very simple of just, I mean, a main one is just me being on billboards. Like, I think being on billboards in enough places where the people who actively don't like me have to see me.
Yes.
They have to drive past my face. They're like, oh my God, she's on my TV. She's on these magazines. Like, I don't even really care about being on a magazine, but I'm like, I only care because I know that you will see me on a magazine.
Yes.
That is what is important to me. So it's a lot of that. And then specifically, it probably might have shaped because I sent that email to Anne, but I have a very specific ISU fantasy
ooh.
In which I get famous enough that they invite me back to speak. Like a Sean Hayes situation.
Yes, ticketed.
Yes. And I'm like in the theater, everybody's talking to me and they're like, oh my gosh, your career. Ha ha, yes. And then it's moderated by somebody who like some faculty, whatever. And then somebody starts asking me about my experience at ISU. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's go. I'm like, actually, it was trash because of this. They put me on probation because of this. Here are all the things they never tell you about. Mm-hmm. Like, you will spend the entire time getting taught, like, acting is a business. You should know about business. But then you're not allowed to take any business classes to actually learn how to market and brand yourself.
Yep.
And so my fantasy is just very much so about being famous enough that they care that I went to that school. And then sitting there and being like, I did all of this despite you.
Like, yes.
You don't get to claim me as somebody. I think that's definitely, I imagine that's probably frustrating for, like, a Meryl Streep, maybe not. Maybe she went to Yale, so like she probably did learn some things.
Mm-hmm.
But like people who make it to a certain degree and then their school is like, oh my God, yes, 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 this is our LaRoyce. This
yes.
is LaRoyce. And it's like, have we asked LaRoyce like how he feels about this experience and you claiming him and like, yes, he's this way because of what we taught him.
Like, no, he's fucking not. LaRoyce yeah. is one of those people who just like is A, gorgeous, B, B, like just has that personality where you just like gravitate towards him. Like mm-hmm. he was Macduff and Macbeth. I don't think he fully knew his lines, but yeah. I didn't care because I just like, you just want to watch him. Yeah, that was not ISU.
No. Yeah. But it was, no, it wasn't at all. So yeah, most of my fantasies involve me being famous and rubbing it in people's faces, which helps me keep going in times when I'm just like, oh, I guess I don't have any reason to keep doing this. Or like, I've been talking to people lately just with like everything that like all the mainstream conversations that are happening right now about how acting can, like feels so like frivolous right now. And mm-hmm. it feels just like so self-centered. And it's like, I'm trying to find ways to like shift how I feel about it. And like also not only feel like my purpose or like I can only have an impact through acting, because that's the thing I hate the most about theater school is how they tell you, if you want to do anything else in this world, then don't be an actor. If there's anything else on this planet that can bring you joy, then don't be an actor. And it's like, okay, I guess nothing else can make me happy. I cannot find any solace or peace in any other medium, any other creative outlet. I can't do anything besides this. And the second I find joy anywhere else in my life, I should run away from acting.
Yeah. It's
such a bullshit thing. And it like, I'm like, there are so many actors like who like act and then also have organizations and nonprofits, or act and like are activists or do other things. And I'm like, okay, there are more than one way to make an impact in mm-hmm. this world. And it's like, you can also make an impact through storytelling. I absolutely believe in that, and the power of like inspiring or educating or just like entertaining people mm-hmm. is powerful. But I'm also like, but there are other things that I also care about that I can't necessarily get through acting. I don't remember what my point was or why I started talking about that.
Revenge fantasies.
Yes. Thank you mm-hmm. so much. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm at this place where I'm like, I want to be powerful more than anything.
Yes.
And like, I want to have an impact, and I want to do things that feel like purposeful, and not just like self-centered. But yeah, like that like little bit in the back of your head where you're like, oh, there are people I have to prove wrong. So that's what I'm going to use until I can like tap into something that's not external.
Yes. I love the idea of like someone who wronged you, like waiting, you know, to get a filling at the dentist, and they look down at the little coffee table in the waiting room, and then they just see your face smiling up at them from a magazine, and they're like, holy fuck.
Beautiful.
They pick it up and they're like skimming through the pages, and the dentist is like, it's time to come in. And the person's like, huh? And they're just so like enveloped in like your spread in the magazine. Like Taylor Wisham is taking Hollywood by storm, and she's doing it with ease.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's like one of those things where I have like some big project coming up. So I'm on like a new magazine every other month for like 4 months straight. And then like, I'm on your late night show.
Yes.
I'm on your daytime show. Okay. You can't get away from me. Okay. Oh wait, I have a book coming out. Have you seen me on my book tour?
Yeah. I want a book tour so bad. I also, do you ever fantasize about like the cute shoes you would wear on a late night talk show when your legs are like delicately crossed and you're like, they've like oiled your legs up so that they're nice and like shiny and just look like long and lean, and you have your cute shoes and you're like talking to like a talk show host? Yeah.
I've definitely thought about like outfits, because I'm like, you have to have an outfit that looks good as you walk to sit, but mm-hmm. also looks good as you sit, and like you're sitting the whole time. So, and then because like too many times people will wear like really short dresses, and then the whole time they're just kind of like pulling it down because they're so uncomfortable because you can see their vagina or whatever they have. But I've also, have you ever like been a slightly crazy person and like pretended you were being interviewed by one of those shows and just like
yes,
all the time?
Yes,
all the time. Like I practice for Ellen because that's a different vibe than like a Kimmel or a Fallon.
Yes.
Yes. I have yet to really practice much for like a Good Morning America, but I should for when my book comes out. So, because that's probably more of a book tour feel.
Totally.
Yeah. And you just have to be like ready for like, okay, is Ellen going to try and scare me behind the couch? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Doing? Ellen, I don't trust Ellen. Like you got to be on your shit if you're going to talk to Ellen.
Yes.
But I feel like Kimmel and like Fallon just want to like giggle with you and like kiki. And I also feel like a daytime talk show feel is different than a nighttime talk show feel.
Absolutely. Like, what are you talking about? What are you discussing? How do you keep people informed and interested and engaged? But like, you're not telling like the dirtiest joke you have. How do you keep it real? Because you want to have charisma, but not look like you practiced and rehearsed too much, but you want to have some things in the back of your pocket.
Yeah, you don't want to be like Jennifer Lawrence that's like, I farted today. Oh! And you're like, okay, like, wow, you're so relatable.
I ate pizza this morning and it's like,
I'm so crazy. I had pizza for breakfast. It's like, fuck off.
Yeah.
That's great. I love a good revenge fantasy. They really do keep you going. And I also think that like you specifically have so much to say, so much wisdom to share. And I think that it is, you're more likely to stick to this career path we've chosen if you also want to do something with that power, like something positive. Like you don't just want to be powerful to be powerful or famous to be famous. Like you want to be like positively influential. And that's part of why like I've gotten really pissed off the last few weeks when I see people with these big platforms not saying or doing shit, because I'm like, it is such a gift to have millions of people looking to you for what to do.
Exactly. It's so frustrating because like, that's the thing too, is it's like, I don't want to be like, the idea of being a celebrity sounds so painful to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, I was having this conversation with another friend because we were talking about that, and she's just like, cause she wants to move to New York soon. And she's like, I just feel so, you know, kind of silly and frivolous because you have all these people in Chicago who are like, we're doing real art here. And like, I still have a day job for 40 years while I act on the side. And it's like, okay, well, I don't want this to be a hobby. And I was just talking to her about like how if we were lawyers, like us wanting to make partner would make sense because that's like the highest you can be. And it's like, okay, if I want to be an actor, me wanting to like win awards or be like, have a like making a lot of money or like in a lot of projects is not me wanting to be frivolous because I want to be like so famous and please like follow me. Like that sounds so painful. Somebody following me with a camera.
Yes.
I think it's totally valid to be like, okay, but the way I'm going to have the most impact and be at a higher echelon in my career is to have a large amount of people know who I am because that's kind of how the cookie crumbles. But I totally agree. Like it has been the most frustrating watching people like fucking post a black square and then dip out. And then like, they're like back to my selfies. And it's like, okay. And all they did was hashtag it Blackout Tuesday. And like, you couldn't even say Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like, and I believe, yeah, you shared some resources on like why the black square like might not be the move and like maybe why you should take it down. And I ended up taking mine down and it's not me being like white person points, but it is like, actually soak up the information that you're being given by black people and like think about it and form your own opinion and then be like, okay, actually, yeah, I'm going to listen and learn and now apply that in whatever way that looks like.
Yeah. It's okay to totally change your mind and learn and grow. And I think people should actively be seeking that. And it's so obvious how few people are like comfortable with the idea of what it really means to grow as a person. But like I literally like had deleted Instagram like right before Mother's Day, partly just because I was like so sad. Everybody was like hanging out with people and I'm like quarantining by myself. But and then I was like, oh, it's convenient that Mother's Day, like I won't have Instagram. And I only like re-downloaded it again and got on because I went on Instagram.com and I was just like saw nothing but black squares. I'm like, what is Instagram broken? Like what's happening?
Yeah.
And I was like, this doesn't feel right. Like it feels like the opposite of the purpose we're trying to serve. But yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a hype up song? And if so, what is it?
Okay, this is a very good question. A hype up song. I think it depends on what it is that you're trying to get hype about, right? What is the move we're going for? Are we trying to build confidence? Are we just trying to have a good time? Are we trying to be a bad bitch? Like, what is the move, right? So there's different songs. Like I always listen to usually like, I want to dance with somebody. Like if I'm in a show, that's like my warm up song. I'm just like fucking all over the stage, like moving like a maniac. I personally think I'm going to say a controversial statement. I personally believe that Beyonce's best song is School and Life. And everybody, I just feel like it's the most underrated song. And I feel like it doesn't matter how old you are. She has something to say to you.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what's like she is talking to you and you better go out there and you better school life. Okay. You better get ready. And it's like, yes, that is correct. I also love I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross. Oh,
me
love
too.
That.
That's good to like listen to when you're thinking about your revenge fantasy, like the dress you're going to wear, the places you're going to go, the dinners you're going to have with Dan Levy, stuff like that.
It makes me feel because it is the song that ends Made in Manhattan.
Oh,
by Lopez. And so I feel that a lot of people like to shit on that movie. I think it's a brilliant film.
I love that movie.
And that is how it ends. And she has like gotten this money. She started this maid business, like she is, or this hotel. And I'm like, yes, she is coming out into the world. I'm coming out into the world. So I just feel like that, how you feel, if you've never seen that movie, if you go watch it, how you will feel at the end of that movie as the credits roll is how you will feel every time you listen to I Am Coming Out by Diana Ross.
True.
I also started listening to, I heard you talk about this, which was shocking. I was like, look at him. Like learning some culture, but he talked about Yvonne Orji's new special, and there's the theme song of that special, "Mama, I Made It." I've been listening to that nonstop since it came out like last week. I'm like, yes, that's right. I made it. I'm sitting at home doing nothing, and I'm unemployed, but I made it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. Those are great picks. I just sent you, was it last week, the like Spotify Leo playlist for this year?
Yes.
And we're Leos. And like, it was I feel like it embodied, that whole playlist embodied the whole vibe you just mentioned.
Exactly. Speaking of, okay, sidebar. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about a possible quarantine birthday?
Not great. What are
your thoughts? Yeah, no, same. I'm adamant. I will set the world on fire. I'm not going to be one of these people who has a Zoom birthday call. Like,
fuck
what
no.
I can do is have a Zoom happy hour. And one of my friends told me, like, I think, well, I've actually heard a lot of people say this about like Zoom, like birthdays. It's so weird because unlike, like, let's say you're all getting on Zoom to watch a movie or like specifically to talk to your friends, it's like, here are 20 boxes of half of these people you might not even know. You can only speak one at a time. So every time you speak, everybody has to get quiet and look at you while you speak. And everybody's just sitting at home with a glass of something to drink. And they're like, happy birthday. And you're like, I'm going to die inside.
It's fucking hell.
No, it's horrible. I will not. And I will figure out whatever phase Illinois is in when it's August, I will make do, but I am not. Don't drive by my window and honk your horn with some balloons. Mm-mm. Like, we're not doing that Leo season. Like,
no, it's like, no. This is for a Leo, like to spend our birthdays in quarantine is like truly devastating. Like, we don't operate under these circumstances. And like, I feel badly because I've like, some of my closest friends have already had their birthdays in quarantine. Jake's 30th was in quarantine. I've had friends have quarantine weddings because their weddings got canceled. And I'm like, oh, I was like, wow, you guys, that's like so great. And like, I was supportive and, you know, I like wanted to celebrate them and make them feel special. But now that like the shoe's on the other foot, I'm like, mm-mm. Like, okay. I would rather just like build a fort in my bed and just like stay in it all day alone than pretend like this is some fun, special circumstance. Cause like, it's not.
No, I had a daydream like a month or so ago that it was my birthday and I was just laying in bed and then people were like FaceTiming me like, happy birthday, you know, it's quarantine. And I just started crying because I was like, they're going to ask me how I'm doing and I'm going to look at them and be like, not well, I am not okay.
Yeah.
I need to be with people celebrating me. That is the whole purpose. I love my birthday.
Yes. It's like, I want to wear something sparkly. Mm-hmm. I want to be at a bar where I've forced a bunch of people to gather to celebrate me. Mm-hmm. And then you'll have those two friends that like pull a Jenna Little and just like get you a gift. And you're like, I was not expecting this expensive candle, but I'm very happy you got it for me.
Thank you for this. Oh my God. Card with cash. Thank you, rich friend. Yeah. Do you know what you would like to do for your birthday yet?
Like if we're out of quarantine, even though we won't be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to do like a Sunday fun day type thing this year where like I have a bunch of people like I probably get brunch with like just a small handful of friends. Mm-hmm. And then I invite like everybody to like a bar after to just like get day drunk, maybe like play some cornhole, like kind of like a divey bar vibe. Mm-hmm. So I can just wear like cowboy boots and like ripped shorts and just be like, oh, I'm so like lax and cool, but also it's my fucking birthday and you better know.
Yeah, she hasn't thought much about it.
Not much about it. Wait, what about you?
Okay, so I was debating between going to like this divey like karaoke bar.
Oh, I love karaoke.
Doing like karaoke and just having everybody like just like let's get cheap drinks. And then I was like, I have not looked into how much this would cost, which is really the main reason why I wouldn't do it, and it'd just be logistically hard to figure out. But renting like a trolley. And then what we do is we only go to places that are significant to me in Chicago. So like, we'll go to a bar by the museum I used to work at. We'll go to the bar that is near the first apartment I ever had in Chicago.
Yes.
And then like, so we'll do that a bit. And then we'll stop by Buckingham Fountain so that everybody can make a wish into the water. And then everybody makes a wish. And then we go to like, I don't know, some larger bar or like situation or whatever. And like anybody who wasn't on the trolley can come and meet and we just hang out. And that's what I would do.
That's so fun. Like a Taylor tour where you can make a wish. Mm-hmm. I love this. If you don't do it this year, you have to do it at some point because it's such a fucking good idea.
It's a good idea. I'm just like, I would have to figure out where we would go. But I'm like, that sounds like a lot of fun. And then you're just playing music on the trolley the whole time.
Yes. All your favorite songs.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, I love that. I really, you know, I know that we probably, I don't want to be a bummer. Like we probably won't get our birthday wishes, but like 100%. Our birthday wishums, but but I'm going to be optimistic until we can't be anymore.
It's June. Like, we have time. I think we have time for a second, like a wave, if a wave is going to come, and then we can be back out.
That being said, everyone wear a fucking mask.
Please, sweet Jesus.
Like, please, please, please. I'm at a point too where, like, you know, people have different opinions on where this virus came from, how it's being controlled. Sure. The fact is, it's real. Mm-hmm. People are dying. So wear your fucking mask. Like, that's the conversation we're having. It's just like, how do we help other people from not dying?
Absolutely. And I think people who are younger are like, oh, it's not going to affect me. It'll be fine. I'm like, I know somebody in New York who got it. And the only thing that happened to her is she lost her sense of taste and smell. And this was in March, and she still has not gotten her sense of taste and smell back. Oh, like, God. People who get it, like, it's not just like the virus comes and it goes. It's like how the virus, like, affects your body. Like, people who are like, yeah, I have to be on oxygen the rest of my life. I have to, like, I have asthma now permanently.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, okay, like, in general, I just don't even want to kind of get it and see, like, even though I feel like I might have gotten it, like, there was a day where all of a sudden my energy, like, I couldn't do anything.
Same.
Like, nothing. Like, I was just like, something is happening. I felt like not super hot, but just really out of it for like just a full day. And then it was fine. I was like, I got it. It's going to happen to me. And then it went away.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it was like end of February where I was like, what is like, I called out of work, which I literally never do, but I was like, I can't physically move. Like, I feel so weak and so tired.
Yeah. I'm curious. I might do an antibody test just to see if maybe I had it already.
Same.
Yeah.
I'm so curious. Okay. We're reaching the end here. It's making me sad. I'm having so much fun. What's something considered aspirational that you want, but you don't have yet?
Okay, cool. That's a very good question. Lots of things. My life, a job. I really, really, really like, it really, really is an overstatement because it comes with a lot of responsibility, but at some point in my life, I'd like to own like a house. Mm-hmm. I've never actually, like, I didn't grow up living in houses. And so, like, I want a house that has, like, that's very beautiful, like a Jake's home. Mm-hmm. It has to have a pool, like an in-ground pool I'm talking about. Yes. Like, just, like, a really beautiful, lovely home that I would love to have. A job, a stable career where I'm not always constantly worrying about where I'm going to get money from. But I'm like, oh, it's set and it's solid. A romantic partner would be a lovely little ask. My God, going through quarantine single is horrendous. It is such a shitty experience in your, like, cause I have friends who were like, oh, I'm still like, they're like, I'm not seeing anybody, but the person I'm dating is still like coming over to my house every week or whatever. And I'm like, oh, that sounds, at first I was judging everybody. I was like, you're actually supposed to be alone for 14 days. Like, can you do that? And they're like, no. I'm like, okay. So there was like a month where I was like, I'm better than everybody because I'm suffering more than everyone else, like super martyry. Mm-hmm. But yeah, going through quarantine is rough. And then I was like, not even seeing somebody, but like, it was like this guy I dated in the fall. And then we were seeing each other for a few weeks. And while we were out on a date in the fall, he told me that somebody else he was also seeing wanted to be in a monogamous relationship. So he and I could no longer see each other, but we should remain friends. And I agreed to it primarily because he was one of those people who, like, we got along so well, but I knew, like, this is not going to last. Like, it's going to end at some point. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, that's fine. And we were like friends for like months and months. And then he broke up with this girl in like January or something. Then we started hooking up again, and then the quarantine hit, and I'm like, okay, well, when it's over, I still have somebody on the side. And then literally a month, not even, maybe 3 weeks into quarantine, we had a conversation just about like what was happening. And he was like, I don't think we have any sexual chemistry and we should stop seeing each other.
What the fuck?
And I got so annoyed because his reasoning was literally like, I was like, well, we could have talked about this and just figured out what was happening, but you decided to make a decision for the both of us.
As yeah.
Boys. And I was like, because he was like, well, you know, I feel like our communication is really good, but, you know, something's just not really happening. And I'm like, or the fact is that when you go down on me and I tell you what you should be doing, you don't actually correct your behavior.
That's the most infuriating thing. Like, I once dated someone where I would literally be like, oh, yes, right there.
Yes.
Keep doing that. Do not stop. And then he'd like switch it up. And I'm like, yeah. I literally just fucking told you what I needed.
There have been times where I've literally like maintained like silence and tried not to like breathe too heavily or make a sound, because as soon as I do, they like start going so fast. And I'm like, I didn't ask you to do that. I asked you to maintain consistency. That's yes. it. Even if I'm really into this, you don't stop what you were doing. And then right at the precipice, you decide to go on a loop-de-loop someplace else.
Yeah. That's it's such a selfish act, truly.
It is.
Because you're like, I'm literally like, I'm upholding my end of this. I'm communicating what I'm enjoying.
Yes.
And what you're doing when you change your mind and switch it up is you're saying you don't give a fuck what I want. And you're claiming that you're doing this like act of like love by doing this thing, quote, for me. But then when I tell you what I need for me, you don't fucking do it.
Right. Yes.
Great answers. I want all those things for you, and you will get all of those things.
Fingers crossed. You know, I think that's the thing about like, in terms of like not aspirational, there's this like counter argument in your head of like, will I ever get the things I actually want? Or will I be that person who is constantly always wanting for things and is like dissatisfied? Or like there's this like fear. I'm like, I don't want to be like a starving artist the rest of my life. You know what I mean? I'm over it.
Like, yes. Yeah. And I feel like it has to also come with like, you didn't grow up with money, neither did I. And this feeling of like, I don't know about you, but like, I, because of that, have just told myself, like, I've had these looping thought patterns of like, I'm just not someone who has money. I just don't have that. Like, it's just a thing I don't have. And it's like, why the fuck not?
Yeah, it's like you have to like change your relationship and like ideas around money and feel comfortable with the idea of like having it. And like, also like, how do you think like, cause I also think it's this thing of like, oh, we put all this bad stuff on what it means to be rich or have money. And I do think there are a lot of trash rich people who could be doing more to help society.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not a bad thing if you have money. Like, it's just like how you projected that insecurity.
Yeah.
But absolutely. It's like, it's not cute to me to like when people are like, oh yeah, like I still like pay $400 a month in rent and my mattress is on the floor. I'm like, you're 32.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be doing that anymore. Like at some point, like you got to figure out what you can do to be like self-sustaining. And like, I think people get stuck in this, like, I'm going to have integrity as an artist and I'm only going to like work this and this. And I think you can maintain integrity and also make money to eat food.
Yes. And I think that's like a form of self-love, like feeding yourself delicious foods that you enjoy, or having a bed that just makes you so happy to get into it. Like those just like day-to-day things that make your life feel special and make you feel worthy. Like they come from having the money to access those things. So like there shouldn't be so much shame around being like, no, I want to make a fucking living, like a good living. I want an in-ground pool. Like, I want beams.
Absolutely. I want those beams. Come on, this clay home. It's like if I have friends who are like accountants or lawyers and they're making like $80,000 a year at like 29, like, well, then it's fair for me to also be like, theater, I don't want you to pay me $40 for 3 months of work. Like, I'm not going to take this job. And I think there's just such this idea, especially like in creative fields, that like, you have to have other people in order to make your dreams happen.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I so respect like you having this podcast and your own like content creation mobile that you have created for yourself, that it's not like just beholden upon like you like needing somebody else to say yes. Like, oh, I can't have this podcast until I get a producer and ads, and I can't have this until like all these people tell me I can. And you're just like, no, I'm going to go and buy this microphone and I'm going to do this thing.
I'm going to fucking talk everyone's ear off and we're going to see what happens.
Yeah. You're like, I have opinions and you're going to hear them now. And people listen.
Well, speaking of somebody should have a podcast, we can talk more about this offline, but I'm just saying I would tune in. Do you have any final thoughts to share with my listeners? This has been so lovely. And thank you so much again for being here.
Of course. Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me on Not Aspirational.
Yes.
I'm honored. Final thoughts. Let's see. oh gosh, what a big ask. Like, I have a lot of thoughts. How do I condense them all? Final thoughts. Let's see. If you are a white person, it's nobody's responsibility to absolve you of your guilt but yourself. If you are a young person or just a person in general with dreams, it is totally up to you to decide how far you want to take those dreams. And you have the power and the ability to make them happen. Everybody should read, my therapist is making me read this book, The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. Everyone should read this. It is impeccable and really help you just be a regular ass person. Final thoughts. Be kind, learn things. I have a question for you before we go, just because I just saw this post today and it made me start thinking. A friend of mine, her dad passed away earlier this year, and she made this post because Father's Day is coming up, about like what to do if your friend has a grieving parent. And one of the things it said was, you should ask them questions about their parent. Mm-hmm. And like, I found, like, I started sitting and I was like, oh yeah, I find that like around Mother's Day, like people will reach out and be like, I'm thinking about you. Let me know if I need you. But like, nobody's ever like engaging with me in conversation where I just get to talk about my mom as a person and not her dying. And I'm like, oh, I think I'm like evolving. Cause at first I also avoided that. Cause I'm like, I'm not going to cry around you. But I'm like, oh, I think I'm at this point where I'm ready to like be like, oh yeah, my mom was a fully realized person with a whole life. Do you want to hear about it? I know things.
Yes.
And like, I wonder, like, are you in that place? Are you like in a place where you're like, don't ask me about my mom? Or like, how do you feel?
I'm on a similar page with you, because my therapist said something similar where she was like, I think so often when we lose someone, we associate their memory with the sadness of losing them. But mm-hmm. there are so many great things about that person that like, yes, it's sad because we miss them.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, you have to sort of normalize this person that raised you by being able to be like, oh, my mom would have loved these flowers, or my mom would have loved this house. Like, moving was a big thing for me where like my mom came up a lot, because I'm like, oh, she was really good with like furniture and like decor. And so it actually made me feel closer to her when I started bringing her up and being like, oh, she would really appreciate this chair setup right here. You know what I mean? So yeah, I agree though.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think like, I've been going through a big thing of like, I have all these bins of like, I only just emptied it like 2 or 3 weeks ago when my therapist, that was my homework assignment, of just like stuff that I collected like of my mom's, like, and when we moved all the stuff out of her house. And I'm just like, I'm like, I have too much stuff. First off, being in my house all the time, you just look around and you're like, you have too much stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, have come to this point almost 4 years later of just being like, oh, my mom is not her stuff. My mom is not this like box of collectibles. It's like, you can get rid of a bunch of stuff and keep the things that are important. But like everything, I think when somebody first dies, it's like everything has meaning, because you remember them vividly touching that thing like last week, and you remember every single outfit they wore and all this stuff. So you're like, must keep it all. And then as time goes on, you're kind of like, oh, their memory and who they are is so much more part of like me than it is in these external objects, which is like comforting. It sounds like very scary. If anybody's listening and you have somebody who died very recently, you're like, never. But you'll get to that point where you're kind of like, oh, I can let a lot of this go.
Oh, I think the act of getting rid of stuff is so cleansing. Yes. I just like deleted pretty much my entire Instagram up until like I moved to LA, mostly because I was just like, the shit that I posted, like of being like, OOTD, like, here's my like shitty dinner that I made, like working out. Like, I'm just like, I don't really want to have like an image of myself out there that doesn't represent who I am like now. And the shit that I think is important now.
And I think we get so caught up on like, well, we can't like pretend that we're not these people. I'm like, no, I don't need 600 photos of me from high school.
Yes.
Like, excuse me. Wow. I just don't. And like, I just like, I'm like, I started doing that too, cause I was like, these weird ass posts I made in college are just like, there was one photo of just like my feet in Converse. Like, that's it.
I had the same picture from 2013.
And then like one of like me, like with Dove chocolates and like the little wrapper and inspirational quote. I like took a photo or like
same,
I guess at one point senior year, I mean, who didn't, I drank like one of those giant Barefoot Moscatos by myself in an hour. And I posted about it. And I was like, Taylor, delete this. This cannot, like, yes, you did that, but let it go.
Yes. I always relate it to, lately I've been relating it to, like, when you keep a spiral notebook from a class and you're like, well, I'm going to keep it so I can look at those notes.
Never.
You never fucking look at the notes. You just learn what you learn and then you keep it moving and go learn some more. Like, yes. You know, you never go back to that spiral notebook. So I'm like, I don't really need these, like, embarrassing photos that I posted that I thought were, like, cute or funny. And I'm like, they're dumb. Like, they're embarrassing.
I had, like, an iPhone 2 or some shit and there's, like, no camera quality. Like, yeah.
Yes. And I would always use, like, the Nashville filter.
Yes.
So embarrassing. And, like, the border, like, ugh, I can't.
High contrast.
Oh my gosh, the highest contrast. Taylor, thank you so much for being here. Where can my listeners find you?
Thank you for having me. You can find me most actively on Instagram. A Wishful Dream is my IG handle. You can follow me on Twitter at Tay Wishful. One day, apparently, I realized as I started working on my own website, it is fucking hard and takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But one day I will have a website. And if I get the domain name, it'll be thewishingwell.com. But pay attention
to you.
Isn't it cute?
Yeah.
Pay attention to my, like, social media and you'll find out. And then I'll, like, I hope to be able, like, when I figure out how to do it all, to, like, be able to link, like, YouTube videos to the site and, like, have a blog and then acting stuff. We'll see what happens. But yes.
Oh, I love that. Taylor, thank you so much again. You're the best.
Thank you. You too. You look very nice. Hannah looks very cute today. It's like 9 in the morning where she is. Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
feel cute, but thank you. And guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Bye. Bye.